Nicholas Farrell and Ben Lloyd Hughes. Here to introduce the play is Emma Smith, Professor of Shakespeare Studies at Hertford College, Oxford.
Think Shakespeare's Henry V, and you may already have a strong impression. Patriotism, battle heroics, the band of brothers, and Laurence Olivier on a white horse, all shining armour and pudding bowl haircut. But the play is more than that. From the start, amid Elizabeth I's attempts to quell what the English called the Irish Rebellion, it had a complex relationship with war, politics, and morality. It was probably first performed at the New Globe Theatre in Southwark-on-Bankside. When the chorus draws attention to the wooden O, spectators may have been invited to check out the new venue. The year 1599 was a troubled one. Food prices were high, men and supplies were being diverted to Ireland. Elizabeth was ageing and had no successor. Henry V's fantasy of an English victory at Agincourt could be read as a feel-good play in the dog days of the turn of the century. A brave young king, rather than an old unmarried queen. Decisive victory over a long war of attrition. It even ends like romantic comedy, as the enemies join in marriage over some distinctly English attempts at speaking French. We all love a happy ending. Shakespeare, though, doesn't really do propaganda, and nor is he a mouthpiece for the authorities. Voices challenging the dominant story of the play can't be quieted. Henry continually encounters resistance, including the conspiracy of the noblemen and the terrified soldiers before the battle. The princess herself is not entirely convinced. The question of just war, is Henry's campaign in France right, keeps whispering. The end of the play suggests it has all been for nothing. There is something ultimately merciless about Henry as king. His inspiring rhetoric of brotherhood and bravery is the flip side of his order to his troops to commit war crimes. Both are pragmatic. Shakespeare knows we want a hero, but offers this distinctly imperfect alternative to his and our unheroic world.
Quiet in the studio. Green light coming.
Oh, for a muse of fire that would ascend the brightest heaven of invention. A kingdom for a stage, princes to act, and monarchs to behold the swelling scene. Then should the warlike Harry, like himself, assume the port of Mars, and at his heels, leashed in like hounds, should famine, sword, and fire crouch for employment. Can this cockpit hold the vasty fields of France? Or may we cram within this wooden O the very casks that did affright the air at Agincourt? Suppose within the girdle of these walls are now confined two mighty monarchies, whose high uprearied and abutting fronts the perilous narrow ocean parts asunder. Piece out our imperfections with your thoughts, into a thousand parts divide one man, and make imaginary puissance. Think when we talk of horses that you see them printing their proud hooves in the receiving earth. For 'tis your thoughts that now must deck our kings, carry them here and there, jumping o'er times, turning the accomplishment of many years into an hourglass. For the which supply, admit me, chorus, to this history.
Henry V by William Shakespeare.
But, my good lord, how now for mitigation of this bill urged by the Commons?
It must be thought on. If it pass against us, we lose the better half of our possession, for all the temporal lands which men devout by testament have given to the church would they strip from us.
Yeah, but how, my lord, shall we resist it now?
The king is full of grace and fair regard.
And a true lover of the Holy Church.
The courses of his youth promised it not. The breath no sooner left his father's body, but that his wildness, mortified in him, seemed to die too. Never was such a sudden scholar made. Hear him debate of Commonwealth affairs, you would say it hath been all in all his study. List his discourse of war, and you shall hear a fearful battle rendered you in music. Turn him to any cause of policy, the Gordian knot of it he will unloose.
But we are blessed in the change. Well, since his addiction was to course his vein, his company's unlettered, rude and shallow. Mm. His hours filled up with riots, banquets, sports. And never noted in him any study, any retirement, any sequestration from open haunts and popularity.
Mm. The strawberry grows underneath the nettle. And wholesome berries thrive and ripen best, neighboured by fruit of baser quality.
But, my good lord, the bill. What prevention? Doth the king incline to it or no?
He seems indifferent, or rather swaying more upon our part. For I have made an offer to his majesty upon our spiritual convocation as touching France to give a greater sum than ever at one time the clergy yet did to his predecessors part withal.
How did this offer seem received, my lord?
With good acceptance of his majesty. Save that there was not time enough to hear, as I perceived his grace would fain have done, the severals and unhidden passages of his true titles to some certain dukedoms, and generally to the crown and seat of France derived from Edward, his great-grandfather.
What was the impediment that broke this off?
The French ambassador on that instant craved audience, and the hour, I think, has come to give him hearing. Is it 4 o'clock?
It is.
Then go we in to know his embassy.
I'll wait upon you, and I long to hear it.
Where is my gracious Lord of Canterbury?
Not here in presence.
Send for him, good uncle.
Shall we call in the ambassador, my liege?
Not yet, my cousin. We would be resolved, before we hear him, of some things of weight that task our thoughts concerning us and France.
God and his angels guard your sacred throne and make you long become it.
Sure, we thank you. My learned lord, we pray you to proceed and justly and religiously unfold why the law salic that they have in France or should not bar us in our claim. And God forbid, my dear and faithful lord, that you should fashion, rest, or bow your reading, or nicely charge your understanding soul with opening titles miscreate, whose right suits not in native colours with the truth. For God doth know how many, now in health, shall drop their blood in approbation of what your reverence shall incite us to. Therefore take heed how you impawn our person, how you awake our sleeping sword of war. We charge you, in the name of God, take heed. For never two such kingdoms did contend without much fall of blood, whose guiltless drops are every one a woe. Under this conjuration, speak, my lord. For we will hear, note, and believe in heart that what you speak is in your conscience washed as pure as sin with baptism.
Then hear me, gracious sovereign, and you peers that owe yourselves, your lives and services to this imperial throne. There is no bar to make against your highness' claim to France.
May I with right and conscience make this claim?
Gracious lord, stand for your own. Unwind your bloody flag. Look back into your mighty ancestors. Go, my dread lord, to your great-grandsire's tomb from whom you claim. Invoke his warlike spirit and your great-uncle's Edward the Black Prince, who on the French ground played a tragedy, making defeat on the full power of France. Awake remembrance of these valiant dead, and with your puissant arm, renew their feats. You are their heir. You sit upon their throne. The blood and courage that renowned them runs in your veins. And my thrice puissant liege is in the very maymorn of his youth, ripe for exploits and mighty enterprises.
Your brother kings and monarchs of the earth do all expect that you should rouse yourself, as do the former lions of your blood.
They know your grace hath cause and means and might. So hath your highness. Never king of England had nobles richer and more loyal subjects, whose hearts have left their bodies here in England and lie pavilioned in the fields of France.
Oh, let their bodies follow, my dear liege, with blood and sword and fire to win your right. In aid whereof we of the spirituality will raise your highness such a mighty sum as never did the clergy at one time bring in to any of your ancestors.
We must not only arm to invade the French, but lay down our proportions to defend against the Scot, who will make road upon us with all advantages. For you shall read that my great-grandfather never went with his forces into France, but that the Scot, on his unfurnished kingdom, came pouring like the tide into a breach.
She hath been then more feared than harmed, my liege.
But there's a saying, very old and true, if the Jew will France win, then with Scotland first begin. For once the eagle England being in prey, to her unguarded nest the weasel Scot comes sneaking, and so sucks her princely eggs, playing the mouse in absence of the cat, to tame and havoc more than she can eat.
It follows then the cat must stay at home.
Yet that is but a crushed necessity, since we have locks to safeguard necessities, and pretty traps to catch the petty thieves. While that the armoured hand doth fight abroad, the advised head defends itself at home.
Therefore to France, my liege. Divide your happy England into four, whereof take you one quarter into France, and you withal shall make all Gallia shake.
Call in the messengers sent from the Dauphin. Now are we well resolved, and by God's help, and yours, the noble sinews of our power, France being ours, will bend it to our oar, or break it all to pieces.
Your Highness.
Now are we well prepared to know the pleasure of our fair cousin Dauphin, for we hear your greeting is from him, not from the king.
May it please your majesty to give us leave freely to render what we have in charge, or shall we sparingly show you far off the Dauphin's meaning and our embassy?
We are no tyrant, but a Christian king. Therefore, with frank and with uncurbed plainness, tell us the Dauphin's mind.
Thus, then, in few. Your Highness, lately sending into France, did claim some certain dukedoms in the right of your great predecessor, King Edward III. In answer of which claim, the Prince, our master, says that you savour too much of your youth, and bids you be advised there's naught in France that can be with a nimble galliard won. You cannot revel into dukedoms there. He therefore sends you, meter for your spirit, this ton of treasure, and in lieu of this, desires you let the dukedoms that you claim hear no more of you. This the Dauphin speaks.
What treasure, uncle?
Tennis balls, my liege.
We are glad the Dauphin is so pleasant with us. His present and your pains we thank you for. When we have matched our rackets to these balls, we will in France, by God's grace, play a set shall strike his father's crown into the hazard. Tell him he hath made a match with such a wrangler that all the courts of France will be disturbed with chases. And we understand him well, how he comes o'er us with our wilder days, not measuring what use we made of them. We never valued this poor seat of England, and therefore, living hence, did give ourselves to barbarous license, as 'tis ever common that men are merriest when they are from home. But tell the Dauphin I will keep my state, be like a king, and show my sail of greatness when I do rouse me in my throne of France, and I will rise there with so full a glory that I will dazzle all the eyes of France, yea, strike the Dauphin blind to look on us. And tell the pleasant prince this mock of his hath turned his balls to gunstones, and his soul shall stand sore charged for the wasteful vengeance that shall fly with them. For many a thousand widows shall this mock out of their dear husbands, mock mothers from their sons, mock castles down, and some are yet ungotten and unborn that shall have cause to curse the Dauphin's scorn. But this lies all within the will of God, to whom I do appeal, and in whose name tell you the Dauphin I am coming on, to venge me as I may, and to put forth my rightful hand in a well-hallowed cause. So get you hence in peace, and tell the Dauphin his jest will savour but of shallow wit, when thousands weep more than did laugh at it. Convey them with safe conduct. Fare you well.
This was a merry message.
We hope to make the sender blush at it. Therefore, my lords, omit no happy hour that may give furtherance to our expedition, for we have now no thought in us but France, save those to God that run before our business. Therefore, let our proportions for these wars be soon collected, and all things thought upon, that may with reasonable swiftness add more feathers to our wings. For God before will chide this Dauphin at his father's door. Therefore, let every man now task his thought, that this fair action may on foot be brought.
Now all the youth of England are on fire. Now thrive the armourers, and honour's thought reigns solely in the breast of every man. For now sits expectation in the air, and hides a sword from hilts unto the point with crowns imperial, crowns and coronets promised to Harry and his followers.
Well, Mitch, Corporal Nim.
Good morrow, Lieutenant Bardolph.
What? Are Ancient Pistol and new friends yet?
For my part, I care not. I say little, but when time shall serve, there shall be smiles, but that shall be as it may. I dare not fight, but I will wink and hold out mine iron. Here's a simple one, but what though? It will toast cheese, and it will endure cold as another man's sword will, and there's an end.
I will bestow a breakfast to make you friends, and we'll be all three sworn brothers to France. Let it be so, good Corporal Nim.
Faith, I will live so long as I may, that's the certain of it, and when I cannot live any longer, I will do as I may. That is the rendezvous of it.
It is certain, Corporal, that he's married to Mistress Quickly, and certainly she did you wrong, for you were troth plight to her.
I cannot tell. Things must be as they may. Men may sleep, and they may have their throats about them at a time, and some say knives have edges. It must be as it may. There must be conclusions. Well, I cannot tell.
Here comes Ancient Pistol and his wife. Good Corporal, be patient here.
How now, mine host, Pistol?
Best take. Cost on me, host. Now by this hand I swear I scorn the term. Nor shall my Nell keep lodgers.
No, by my troth, not long, for we cannot lodge and board a dozen of 14 gentlewomen that live honestly by the prick of their needles, but it will be thought we keep a bawdy house, straight.
Yeah.
Oh, well a day, lady, if he be not drawn now. Oh, we shall see willful adultery and murder committed.
Good Lieutenant, good Corporal, offer nothing here.
Pish!
Iceland dog, the prick-eared cur of Iceland.
Oh, good Corporal Nim, show thy valour and put up your sword.
Will you shug off?
Oh.
I would have you soulless.
Oh, soulless, egregious dog. Oh, viper vile, for I can take, and Pistol's cock is up, and flashing fire will follow.
You cannot conjure me. I have an humour to knock you indifferently well.
Hear me, what I say. He that strikes the first stroke, I'll run up to the hilts, as I am a soldier. I will cut thy throat one time or other, in fair terms. That is the humour of it.
Mine host, Pistol, you must come to my master. Huh? And you, hostess, he's very sick and would to bed. Faith, he's very ill.
Oh, my troth! Sir John of Yield, the crow, a pudding one of these days. The king has killed his heart. Good husband, come, presently.
Come. Shall I make you two friends? We must to France together. Why the devil should we keep knives to cut one another's throats?
You'll pay me the 8 shillings on one of you at betting.
The best is the slave that pays.
That now I will have. That's the humour of
it. As manhood shall compare and push off.
By this sword, he that makes the first bust, I'll kill him. By this sword, I will. Corporal Nim and thou wilt be friends. Be friends. And thou wilt not, why then, be enemies with me too. Prithee, put up.
I shall have my 8 shillings on one of you at betting.
A noble shalt thou have, and present pay. And liquor likewise will I give to thee. And friendship shall combine, and brotherhood. I'll live by Nim, and Nim shall live by me. Give me thy hand.
I shall have my noble.
In cash, most justly paid.
Well, then, that's the humour of it.
Where's ever you came of women? Come in quickly to Sir John. Oh, poor whore. He is so shaped of a burning quotidian tertian that it is most lamentable to behold. Sweet men, come to him.
The king hath run bad humours on the night. That's the even of it.
Yep, thou hast spoke the right. His heart is fractured and corroborate.
The king is a good king, but it must be as it may.
Let us condole the knight. For, lambkins, we will live.
The French, advised by good intelligence of this most dreadful preparation, shake in their fear, and with pale policy seek to divert the English purposes. O England, model to thy inward greatness, like little body with a mighty heart, what mightst thou do, that honour would thee do, were all thy children kind and natural. But see thy fault. France hath in thee found out a nest of hollow bosoms, which he fills with treacherous crowns and 3 corrupted men. 1, Richard, Earl of Cambridge, and the 2, Henry, Lord Scroope of Masham, and the 3, Sir Thomas Grey, Knight of Northumberland, have, for the guilt of France, guilt indeed, confirmed conspiracy with fearful France. And by their hands this grace of kings must die, if hell and treason hold their promises.
For God, his grace is bold to trust these traitors.
They shall be apprehended by and by.
How smooth and even they do bear themselves, as if allegiance in their bosoms sat, crowned with faith and constant loyalty.
The king hath note of all that they intend, by interception which they dream not of.
Nay, but the man that was his bedfellow, whom he hath dulled and cloyed with gracious favours, that he should for a foreign purse so sell his sovereign's life to death and treachery.
Thus it's the wind fair, and we shall aboard. My Lord of Cambridge, and my kind Lord of Masham, and you, my gentle knight, give me your thoughts. Think you not that the powers we bear with us will cut their passage through the force of France, doing the execution and the act for which we have in head assembled them?
No doubt, my liege, if each man do his best.
I doubt not that, since we are well persuaded we carry not a heart with us from hence that grows not in a fair consent with ours.
Never was monarch better feared and loved than is your majesty.
True, those that were your father's enemies have steeped their galls in honey and serve you with hearts create of duty and of zeal.
We therefore have great cause of thankfulness. Uncle of Exeter.
Sire.
Enlarged that man committed yesterday that railed against our person. We consider it was excess of wine that set him on, and on his more advice, we pardon him.
That's mercy, but too much security. Let him be punished, Sovereign, lest example breed by his sufferance more of such a kind.
Oh, let us yet be merciful.
So may your highness, and yet punish too.
Sir, you show great mercy if you give him life, after the taste of much correction.
Alas, your too much love and care of me are heavy orisons against this poor wretch. If little faults proceeding on distemper shall not be winked at, how shall we stretch our eye when capital crimes, chewed, swallowed, and digested, appear before us? We'll yet enlarge that man, though Cambridge, Scroope and Grey, in their dear care and tender preservation of our person, would have him punished. And now, to our French causes. Who are the late commissioners?
I won, my lord. Your highness bade me ask for it today.
So did you me, my liege.
And I, my royal sovereign.
Then Richard, Earl of Cambridge, there is yours. Mm-hmm. There yours, Lord Scroope of Masham, and Sir Knight Grey of Northumberland, the same as yours. Read them. And no, I know your worthiness. My Lord of Westmoreland and Uncle Exeter, we will aboard tonight. Why? How now, gentlemen? What see you in those papers that you lose so much complexion? Look ye, how they change. Their cheeks are paper. Why, what read you there that has so cowarded and chased your blood out of appearance?
I do confess my fault, and do submit me to your highness' mercy.
To which we all appeal.
The mercy that was quick in us, but late by your own counsel, is suppressed and killed. You must not dare for shame to talk of mercy. For your own reasons, turn into your bosoms as dogs upon their masters, worrying you. See you, my princes and my noble peers, these English monsters. What shall I say to thee, Lord Scroope? Thou cruel, ingrateful, savage, and inhuman creature. Thou that didst bear the key of all my counsels, that knewst the very bottom of my soul, that almost might have coined me into gold, wouldst thou have practiced on me for thy use? May it be possible that foreign hire could out of thee extract one spark of evil that might annoy my finger. 'Tis so strange that, though the truth of it stands off as gross as black and white, my eye will scarcely see it. Constant in spirit, not swerving with the blood, garnished and decked in modest compliment, such and so finely bolted didst thou seem. And thus thy fall hath left a kind of blot to mark the full-fraught man and best endued with some suspicion. I will weep for thee, for this revolt of thine, methinks, is like another fall of man. Their faults are open. Arrest them to the answer of the law, and God acquit them of their practices.
I arrest thee of high treason by the name of Richard, Earl of Cambridge. I arrest thee of high treason by the name of Thomas Grey, Knight of Northumberland. I arrest thee of high treason by the name of Henry, Lord Scroope of Masham.
Our purposes God justly hath discovered, and I repent my fault more than my death, which I beseech your highness to forgive, although my body pay the price of it.
God quit you in his mercy. Hear your sentence. You have conspired against our royal person, joined with an enemy proclaimed, and from his coffers received the golden earnest of our death, wherein you would have sold your king to slaughter, his princes and his peers to servitude, his subjects to oppression and contempt, and his whole kingdom into desolation. Get you therefore hence, poor, miserable wretches, to your death. The taste whereof God of his mercy give you patience to endure and true repentance of all your dear offences. Bear them hence. Now, lords, cheerly to see. The signs of war advance. No king of England, if not king of France.
Let me bring thee to Staines.
No, for my manly heart doth yearn. Oh. Bardolph, be blithe. Nim, rouse thy vaunting veins. Boy, bristle thy courage up. For Falstaff, he is dead, and we must yearn, therefore.
Would I were with him, wheresoever he is, either in heaven or in hell?
Oh, nay, sure, he's not in hell. He's in Arthur's bosom. If ever man went to Arthur's bosom, he parted even just between 12 and 1, even at the turning of the tide. For after I saw him fumble with his sheets and play with flowers and smile upon his fingers' ends, I knew there was but one way, for his nose was as sharp as a pen, and he babbled of green fields. How now, Sir John, quoth I, what man, be a good cheer. So he cried out, God, 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 3 or 4 times. Now I, to comfort him, bid him he should not think of God. I hope there was no need to trouble himself with any such thoughts yet. So he bade me lay more clothes on his feet. I put my hand into the bed and I felt them, and oh, they were as cold as any stone. And then I felt to his knees, and they were as cold as any stone. And so upward and upward, and all was as cold as any stone.
I say, he cried out for sack.
Aye, that he did.
And for women?
Nay, that he did not.
Yes, that he did. And said they were devils incarnate.
Sure, Shug. The king will be gone from Southampton.
Come, let's away. My love, give me thy lips. Look to my chattels and my movables. Let senses rule. Mm. The word is pitch and pay. Trust none. Eh? Mm. For oaths are straws, men's faiths are wafer cakes, and hold fast is the only dog, my duck. Young fellows at arms, let us to France. Like horse leeches, my boys, to suck, the very blood to suck.
Farewell, hostess.
Oh. Hostess?
Oh.
Oh.
I cannot kiss, that is the humour of it. Oh. Adieu.
Keep close, I need command.
Farewell. Adieu.
Thus comes the English with full power upon us, and more than carefully it us concerns to answer royally in our defences. Therefore, the Dukes of Berry and Breton, of Brabant and of Orléans, shall make forth, and you, Prince Dauphin, with all swift dispatch, to line and new repair our towns of war with men of courage and with means defendant. For England his approaches makes as fierce as water to the sucking of a gulf. It fits us then to be as provident as fear may teach us out of late examples left by the fatal and neglected English upon our fields.
My most redoubted father, it is most meet we arm us against the foe, and let us do it with no show of fear. No, with no more than if we heard that England were busied with a Whitson-Morris dance. For my good liege, she is so idly kinged, her sceptre so fantastically borne by a vain, giddy, shallow, humorous youth, that fear attends her not.
Oh, peace, Prince Dauphin! You are too much mistaken in this king. Question, your grace, the late ambassadors. With what great state he heard their embassy, how well supplied with noble counsellors, how modest in exception, and withal, how terrible in constant resolution.
Well, 'tis not so, my Lord High Constable. But though we think it so, it is no matter. In cases of defence, 'tis best to weigh the enemy more mighty than he seems.
Think we King Harry strong. And princes, look you strongly armed to meet him, for he is bred out of that bloody strain that haunted us in our familiar paths. Witness our too much memorable shame when Cressy Battle fatally was struck, and all our princes captive by the hand of that black name, Edward, Black Prince of Wales. This is a stem of that victorious stock. And let us fear the native mightiness and fate of him.
Ambassadors from Harry, King of England, do crave admittance to your majesty.
We'll give them present audience. Go and bring them. You see, this chase is hotly followed, friends.
Turn head and stop pursuit. For coward dogs most spend their mouths when what they seem to threaten runs far before them. Good my sovereign, take up the English short, and let them know of what a monarchy you are their head. Self-love, my liege, is not so vile a sin as self-neglecting.
From our brother England?
From him. And thus he greets your majesty. He wills you, in the name of God Almighty, that you divest yourself and lay apart the borrowed glories that by gift of heaven, by law of nature and nations, belong to him and to his heirs, namely, the crown and all wide-stretched honours that pertain by custom and the ordinance of times unto the crown of France. That you may know it is no sinister nor no awkward claim, he sends you this most memorable line in every branch, truly demonstrative, willing you overlook this pedigree. And when you find him evenly derived from his most famed of famous ancestors, Edward III, he bids you then resign your crown and kingdom, indirectly held from him, the native and true challenger.
Or else what follows?
Bloody constraint. For if you hide the crown, even in your hearts, there will he rake for it. Therefore, in fierce tempest is he coming, in thunder and in earthquake, like a Jove, that if requiring fail, he will compel. And bids you in the bowels of the Lord deliver up the crown, and to take mercy on the poor souls for whom this hungry war opens his vasty jaws, and on your head turns he the widow's tears, the orphan's cries, the dead man's blood, the pining maiden's groans for husbands, fathers, and betrothed lovers that shall be swallowed in this controversy. This is his claim, his threatening, and my message. Unless the Dauphin be in presence here, to whom expressly I bring greeting to.
For us, we will consider of this further. Tomorrow shall you bear our full intent back to our brother England.
For the Dauphin, I stand here for him. What to him from England?
Scorn and defiance, slight regard, contempt. Thus says my king. And if your father's highness do not, in grant of all demands at large, sweeten the bitter mock you send his majesty, he'll call you to so hot an answer of it that caves and woomy voltages of France shall chide your trespass, and return your mock in second accent of his ordinance.
Say, If my father render fair return, it is against my will. For I desire nothing but odds with England. To that end, as matching to his youth and vanity, I did present him with the Paris balls.
He'll make your Paris Louvre shake for it. And be assured, you'll find a difference, as we his subjects have in wonder found, between the promise of his greener days and these he masters now. Now, he weighs time even to the utmost grain, that you shall read in your own losses if he stay in France.
Tomorrow shall you know our mind at full.
Now dispatch us with all speed, lest that our king come here himself to question our delay.
You shall be soon dispatched with fair conditions. A night is but small breath and little pause to answer matters of this consequence.
Suppose that you have seen the well-appointed king at Hampton Pier embark his royalty, and his brave fleet with silken streamers the young Phoebus fanning. Play with your fancies, and in them behold upon the hempen-tackled shipboys climbing. Hear the shrill whistle, which doth order give to sounds confused. Behold the threadened sails, borne with the invisible and creeping wind, draw the huge bottoms through the furrowed sea, breasting the lofty surge. Oh, do but think you stand upon the ravage and behold a city on the inconstant billows dancing. For so appears this fleet majestical, holding due course to Harfleur. Follow, follow, grapple your minds to sternage of this navy and leave your England as dead midnight still. For who is he whose chin is but enriched with one appearing hair that will not follow these culled and choice-drawn cavaliers to France? Work, work your thoughts and therein see a siege. Behold the ordnance on their carriages with fatal mouths gaping on girded Harfleur. Suppose the ambassador from the French comes back, tells Harry that the king doth offer him Catherine, his daughter, and with her to Dari some petty and unprofitable dukedoms. The offer likes not. And the nimble gunner, with linstock now the devilish cannon, touches.
Once more onto the breach, dear friends, once more. We'll close the wall up with our English dead. Peace. There is nothing so becomes a man as modest stillness and humility. But when the blast of war blows in our ears and imitates the action of the tiger, stiffen the sinews, summon up the blood, disguise fair nature with hard-favored rage. Now set the teeth and stretch the nostril wide, hold hard the breath and bend up every spirit to his full height. On! On, you noble English! Dishonor not your mothers. Now, attest that those whom you'd called fathers did beget you. Be copy now to men of grosser blood and teach them how to war. Can you, good yeoman, whose limbs were made in England, show us here the mettle of your pasture? Let us swear that you are worth your breeding, which I doubt not. For there is none of you so mean and base that hath not noble luster in your eyes. I see you stand like greyhounds in the slips, straining upon the start. So game's afoot. Follow your spirit, and upon this charge, cry God for Harry. England and St. George!
Private corporal, stay, the knocks are too hot. And for my own part, I have not a case of lines. Ha! The humour of it is too hot. That is the very plain song of it.
The plain song is most just. For humours do abound, knocks go and come. God's vassals drop and die, and sword and shield in bloody field doth win immortal fame.
Oh, would I were in a hell house in London, I would give all my fame for a pot of ale and safety.
And I...
What for that breach, you dogs? Come on, you scullion!
You scoundrel dogs! Come to battle, avant! Be merciful, great Duke, to men of mould. Oh, abate thy rage! Abate thy manly rage!
Abate thy rage, great Duke!
God, the fork, abate thy rage! Use lenity, sweet Jack!
Abort, you callion!
These be good humours! Your honour wins bad humours!
As young as I am, I've observed these free swashers. I am boy to them all free. But all they free, though they would serve me, could not be man to me. For indeed, free such antics do not amount to a man. They will steal anything and call it a purchase. Bardolph stole a loot case, bought 12 leagues, and sold it for 3 halfpence. Nim and Bardolph are sworn brothers in filching. They would have me as familiar with men's pockets as their gloves or their handkerchiefs, which makes much against my manhood. I must leave them, seek some better service. Their villainy goes against my weak stomach, and therefore I must cast it up.
How yet resolves the governor of the town? This is the latest pall we will admit. Therefore, to our best mercy, give yourselves. Or, like to men proud of destruction, defy us to our worst. For as I am a soldier, a name that in my thoughts becomes me best, if I begin the battery once again, I will not leave the half-achieved Harfleur till in her ashes she lie buried. The gates of mercy shall be all shut up, and the fleshed soldier, rough and hard of heart, in liberty of bloody hand, shall range with conscience wide as hell, mowing like grass your fresh fair virgins and your flowering infants. What is it then to me, if impious war, arrayed in flames like to the prince of fiends, do with his smirched complexion all fell feats in linked to waste and desolation? What is it to me when you yourselves are cause, if your pure maidens fall into the hand of hot and forcing violation? Therefore, you men of Harfleur, take pity of your town and of your people whilst yet my soldiers are in my command. Whilst yet the cool and temperate wind of grace o'erblows the filthy and contagious clouds of heady murder, spoil, and villainy. If not, why, in a moment, look to see the blind and bloody soldier with foul hand defile the locks of your shrill, shrieking daughters. Your fathers, taken by the silver beards and their most reverend heads, dashed to the walls. Your naked infants, spitted upon pikes, whilst the mad mothers with their howls confused do break the clouds, as did the wives of Jewry at Herod's bloody hunting slaughterman. What say you? Will you yield and this avoid? Or guilty in defense be thus destroyed?
Our expectation hath this day an end. The Dauphin, whom of succors we entreated, returns us that his powers are yet not ready to raise so great a siege. Therefore, great King, we yield our town and lives to thy soft mercy. Enter our gates. Dispose of us and ours, for we no longer are defensible.
Open your gates. Come, Uncle Exeter. Go you and enter Harfleur. There remain, and fortify it strongly against the French. Use mercy to them all.
Sire.
For us, dear uncle, the winter coming on and sickness growing upon our soldiers, we will retire to Calais. Tonight in Harfleur, we will be your guest. Tomorrow, for the march, are we addressed.
Thank you.
Alice, tu as été en Angleterre et tu parles bien le langage.
Oh, un peu, madame.
Je t'en prie, m'enseigner. Il faut que j'apprenne à parler. Comment appelez-vous la main en anglais?
La main? Elle est appelée the hand.
The hand. Et les doigts?
Les doigts. Oh, ma foi, j'oublie les doigts. Mais je me souviendrai. Les doigts, je pense qu'ils sont appelés de fingre. Oui, de fingre.
La main, the hand. Les doigts, de fingre. Je pense que je suis le bon écolier. J'ai gagné deux mots d'anglais vitement. Comment appelez-vous les ongles?
Les ongles, nous les appelons the nails.
Ah, the nails. Écoutez, dites-moi si je parle bien. The hand, the fingers et the nails.
C'est bien dit, madame. Il est fort bon anglais.
Dites-moi l'anglois pour le bras.
The arm, madame.
Et le coude?
The elbow.
The elbow. Je m'en fais la répétition de tous les mots que vous m'avez appris dès à présent.
Il est trop difficile, madame, quand je pense.
Excusez-moi, Alice. Écoutez. The hand. The fingers. The nails. The arma. The bilbao.
The elbow, madame. Oh,
Seigneur Dieu, je m'en oublie, the elbow. Comment appelez-vous le col?
The neck, madame.
De nique. Et le menton?
De chine.
De cygne. Le col de nique, de menton, de cygne.
Oui, sauf votre honneur. En vérité, vous prononcez les mots aussi droit que les natifs d'Angleterre.
Je ne doute point d'apprendre par la grâce de Dieu et en peu de temps.
N'avez-vous pas déjà oublié ce que je vous ai enseigné?
Non. Non, je réciterai à vous promptement. De hand. De fingres, de nails.
De nails, madame.
Oh, de nails. De arm, de ilbao.
Sauf votre honneur, de elbow.
Oh, ainsi dis-je, de elbow. De nick et de sin. Comment appelez-vous le pied et la robe?
Oh, de foot, madame. Et... De coune.
Oh, de foot et de coune. Oh, Seigneur Dieu. Ce sont mots de son mauvais, corruptible, gros et impudique. Et non pour les dames d'honneur d'user, je ne voudrais prononcer ces mots devant les seigneurs de France pour tout le monde. Le foot et le coune. Néanmoins, je réciterai une autre fois ma leçon ensemble. The hand, the fingers, the nails, the arm, the elbow, the nick, the sin, the foot, the coon.
Excellent, madame.
C'est assez pour une fois. Allons-nous à dîner.
Captain Llewellyn.
Llewellyn.
Captain...
Lieutenant Pistol.
Captain, I thee beseech to do me favours. The Duke of Exeter doth love thee well.
Aye, I praise God, and I have merited some love at his hands.
Bardolph, a soldier, firm and sound of heart. Fortune is Bardolph's foe and frowns on him. For he hath stolen a metal box from a church and hanged Mr. B. A damned death. But Exeter hath given the doom of death for loot of little price, therefore go speak. The Duke will hear thy voice. And let not Bardolph's vital thread be cut with edge of penny cord and vile reproach. Speak, Captain, for his life, and I will thee requite.
Angel Pistol, I do partly understand your meaning.
I then rejoice, therefore.
Certainly, ancient, it is not a thing to rejoice at. For if he were my brother, I would desire the Duke to use his good pleasure and put him to execution.
For discipline ought to be used. I'd die and be damned. And Figo for thy friendship.
It is well.
The fig of Spain!
Tis certain he hath passed the River Somme.
Normans. Bastard Normans. Norman bastards.
Chittabatai, where are they, this metal?
Where is Montjoy the Herald? Speed him hence. Let him greet England with our sharp defiance. Up, princes, and with spirit of honor edged more sharper than your swords, high to the field. You, Dukes of Orléans, Bourbon, and of Berry, Alençon, Brabant, Bar, and Burgundy, Jacques Chatillon, Rambert, Vaudemont, Beaumont, Grandpré, Roussy, and Falkenberg, Foy, L'Estrale, Boucicault, and Charolais. High dukes, great princes, barons, lords, and knights, for your great seats now quit you of great shames. Bar Harry England that sweeps through our land with pennons painted in the blood of our fleur. Go down upon him. You have power enough. And in a captive chariot into Rouen, bring him our prisoner.
This becomes the great. Sorry am I, his numbers are so few. His soldiers sick and famished in their march. For I am sure, when he shall see our army, he'll drop his heart into the sink of fear, and for achievement offer us his ransom.
Now forth, Lord Constable, and princes all, and quickly bring us word of England's fall.
How now, Captain Llewellyn? Come you from the bridge?
Aye, so please, Your Majesty.
What men have you lost, Llewellyn?
The condition of the adversary hath been very great, reasonable great. Marry, for my part, I think the Duke hath lost never a man. But one that is like to be executed for robbing a church. One Bardolph, if Your Majesty know the man. His face is all bubuncles and whelks and knobs and flames of fire, and his lips blow at his nose, and it is like a coal of fire, sometimes blue and sometimes red. But his nose is executed and his fire's out.
God save your grace.
And yours, most noble Bardolph.
Come, you virtuous ass, you bashful fool. Must you be blushing? Wherefore blush you now? What a maidenly man-at-arms are you become?
He calls me a man, my lord, through a red lattice, and I could discern no part of his face from the window.
Away! Oh. Your horse and upright rabbit, away!
We would have all such offenders so cut off, and we give express charge that in our marches through the country there be nothing compelled from the villages, nothing taken but paid for, none of the French upbraided or abused in disdainful language. For when lenity and cruelty play for a kingdom, the gentler gamester is the soonest winner.
You know me by my habit.
Well, then I know thee. What shall I know of thee?
My master's mind.
Unfold it.
Thus says my king. Say thou to Harry of England, though we seem dead, we did but sleep. Advantage is a better soldier than rashness. Tell him we could have rebuked him at Harfleur, but that we thought not good to bruise an injury till it were full ripe. Now we speak upon our cue, and our voice is imperial. England shall repent his folly, see his weakness, and admire our sufferance. Bid him therefore consider of his ransom, which must proportion the losses we have borne, the subjects we have lost, the disgrace we have digested. For our losses, his exchequer is too poor. For the effusion of our blood, the muster of his kingdom, too faint a number. And for our disgrace, his own person kneeling at our feet, but a weak and worthless satisfaction. And tell him for conclusion, he hath betrayed his followers, whose condemnation is pronounced. So far, my king and master, so much my office.
What is thy name? I know thy quality.
Montjoy.
Thou dost thy office fairly. Turn thee back. And tell thy king I do not seek him now, but could be willing to march on to Calais without impeachment, for, to say the sooth, my people are with sickness much enfeebled, my numbers lessened, and those few I have almost no better than so many French, who, when they were in health, I tell thee, Harold, I thought upon one pair of English legs did march three Frenchmen. Go bid thy master well advise himself. If we may pass, we will. If we be hindered, we shall your tawny ground with your red blood discolour. And so, Montjoy, fare you well. The sum of all our answer is but this. We would not seek a battle as we are. Nor as we are, we say we will not shun it. So tell your master.
I shall deliver so. Thanks to your highness.
I hope they will not come upon us now.
We are in God's hand, cousin. Not in theirs.
Tut. I have the best armor of the world.
You have an excellent armor, but let my horse have his due.
Tis the best horse of Europe. Will it never be morning?
My Lord of Orléans and my Lord High Constable. Talk of horse and armor.
You are as well provided of both as any prince in the world.
I will not change my horse with any. When I bestride him, I soar. I am a hawk.
Yes, my lord. It's an ideal and excellent horse.
It is the prince of palfreys. His neigh is like the bidding of a monarch, and his countenance enforces homage.
No more, cousin.
Oh. I will trot tomorrow a mile, and my way shall be paved with English faces.
Oh, would it were day. Alas, poor Harry of England. He longs not for the dawning as we do.
What a wretched and peevish fellow is this King of England, to mope with his fat-brained followers so far out of his knowledge.
If the English had any apprehension, they would run away.
That they lack. For if their heads had any intellectual armor, they could never wear such heavy headpieces.
My Lord High Constable, the English lie within 1,500 paces of your tent.
Now. Is it time to arm? Come, shall we about it?
It is now 2 o'clock. And let me see. By 10, we shall have each 100 English.
Now entertain conjecture of a time when creeping murmur and the pouring dark fills the wide vessel of the universe. From camp to camp through the foul womb of night, the hum of either army stilly sounds, that the fixed sentinels almost receive the secret whispers of each other's watch. Fire answers fire, and through their paly flames, each battle sees the other's umbered face. Steed threatens steed in high and boastful neighs, piercing the night's dull ear. And from the tents, the armorers accomplishing the knights with busy hammers closing rivets up give dreadful note of preparation. The country cocks do crow, the clocks do toll, and the third hour of drowsy morning name. Proud of their numbers and secure in soul, the confident and overlusty French do the low-rated English play at dice, and chide the crippletardy gated knight who like a foul and ugly witch doth limp so tediously away. The poor condemned English, like sacrifices by their watchful fires, sit patiently and inly ruminate the morning's danger, and their gesture sad, investing lank, lean cheeks and war-worn coats, presenteth them unto the gazing moon so many horrid ghosts. Oh, now, who'll behold the royal captain of this ruined band, walking from watch to watch, from tent to tent, for forth he goes and visits all his host, bids them good morrow with a modest smile, and calls them brothers, friends, and countrymen. Upon his royal face there is no note how dread an army hath enrounded him, nor doth he dedicate one jot of colour unto the weary and all-watched night, but freshly looks and overbears a taint with cheerful semblance and sweet majesty, that every wretch, pining and pale before, beholding him, plucks comfort from his looks. A largess universal like the sun, his liberal eye doth give to everyone, thawing cold fear, that mean and gentle all, behold as may unworthiness define, a little touch of Harry in the night.
Friends, 'tis true that we are in great danger. The greater, therefore, should our courage be. God Almighty, there is some soul of goodness in things evil, would men observingly distill it out. For our bad neighbour makes us early stirrers, which is both healthful and good husbandry. Thus may we gather honey from the weed and make a moral of the devil himself. Oh, good morrow, old Sir Thomas Erpingham. A good soft pillow for that good white head were better than a churlish turf of France.
Oh, not so, my liege. This lodging likes me better, since I may say now lie I like a king.
'Tis good for men to love their present pains upon example, so the spirit is eased. Let me thy cloak, Sir Thomas. Brothers both, commend me to the princes in our camp. Do my good morrow to them, and anon desire them all to my pavilion.
We shall, my liege.
Shall I attend your grace?
No, my good knight. Go with my brothers to my lords of England. I and my bosom must abate a while, and then I would no other company.
The Lord in heaven bless thee, noble Harry.
God a mercy, old heart. Thou speaks cheerfully.
Kibula.
A friend.
Discuss unto me. Art thou officer, or art thou base, common, and popular?
I am a gentleman of a company. What are you?
As good a gentleman as the Emperor.
Then you are better than the King.
And the King's a bawcock and a heart of gold. A lad of life, an imp of fame. Of parents good, of fist most valiant. I kiss his dirty shoe, and from heartstring I love the lovely bully. What is thy name?
Harry Leroy.
Leroy? That's a Cornish name. Art thou of Cornish crew?
No, I am a Welshman.
Oh. Knowest thou Llewellyn?
Yes.
Tell him I'll knock his leek about his pate upon St. Davy's Day.
Do not you wear your dagger in your cap that day, lest he knock that about yours.
Art thou his friend?
And his kinsman, too.
Well, the fee go for thee, then.
Thank you. God be with you.
My name is Pistol Cold.
It sorts well with your fierceness.
Brother John Bates, is not that the morning which breaks yonder?
I think it be. But we have no great cause to desire the approach of day.
We see yonder the beginning of the day. But I think we shall never see the end of it.
Who goes there?
A friend.
Under what captain serve you?
under Sir Thomas Erpingham.
A good old commander, and a most kind gentleman. I pray you, what thinks he of our estate?
Even as men wrecked upon a sand that looked to be washed off the next tide.
Hath he not told his thought to the king?
No. Nor it is not meet he should, for though I speak it to you, I think the king is but a man as I am. Violet smells to him as it doth to me. The element shows to him as it doth to me. All his senses have but human conditions. His ceremonies laid by, in his nakedness he appears but a man. Therefore, when he sees reason of fears, as we do, his fears, out of doubt, be of the same relish as ours are. Yet, in reason, no man should possess him with any appearance of fear, lest he, by showing it, should dishearten his army.
He may show what outward courage he will, but I believe, as cold as night as 'tis, he could wish himself in Thames up to the neck. And so I would he were. And I'd buy him at all adventures, so we were quit here.
I think he would not wish himself anywhere but where he is.
Then I would he were here alone. And many poor men's lives saved.
I dare say you love him not so ill to wish him here alone. Howsoever you speak this to feel other men's minds, methinks I could not die anywhere so contented as in the king's company, his cause being just and his quarrel honourable.
That's more than we know.
Aye. Or more than we should seek after, for we know enough if we know we are the king's subjects. If his cause be wrong, our obedience to the king wipes the crime of it out of us.
But if the cause be not good, the king himself hath a heavy reckoning to make. When all those legs and arms and heads chopped off in battle shall join together at the latter day and cry all, "We died at such a place," some swearing, some crying for a surgeon, some upon their wives left poor behind them, some upon the debts they owe, some upon their children rawly left. I am afeard there are few die well that die in a battle. Now, if these men do not die well, it will be a black matter for the king that led them to it.
I myself heard the king say he would not be ransomed.
Aye, he said so to make us fight cheerfully, but when our throats are cut, he may be ransomed and we're ne'er the wiser.
If I live to see it, I will never trust his word after.
You may as well go about to turn the sun to ice with fanning in his face with a peacock's feather. You never trust his word after? Come, 'tis a foolish saying.
Your reproof is something too round. I should be angry with you if the time were convenient.
Let it be a quarrel between us, if you live.
I embrace it.
How shall I know thee again?
Give me any glove of thine, and I will wear it in my belt. Then, if ever thou darest acknowledge it, I will make it my quarrel.
Here's my glove. Give me another of thine.
There.
This will I also wear in my cap. If ever thou come to me and say, after tomorrow, this is my glove, by this hand, I will take thee a box on the ear.
If ever I live to see it, I will challenge it.
Thou darest as well be hanged.
Well, I will do it, though I take thee in the king's company.
Keep thy word. Fare thee well.
Upon the king. Let us our lives, our souls, our debts, our careful wives, our children, and our sins lay on the king. We must bear all. Oh, hard condition. Twin-born with greatness, subject to the breath of every fool whose sense no more can feel but his own ringing. And what have kings? The privates have not too, save ceremony. Save general ceremony. And what art thou, thou idle ceremony? Art thou aught else but place, degree, and form, creating awe and fear in other men, wherein thou art less happy being feared than they in fearing? What drink'st thou oft instead of homage sweet, but poisoned flattery? Canst thou, when thou command'st the beggar's knee, command the health of it? No, thou proud dream that plays so subtly with a king's repose. I am a king that find thee, and I know 'tis not the balm, the scepter and the ball, the
sword, the mace, the crown imperial, the intertissued robe of gold and pearl, the far-set title running for the king, the throne he sits on, all the tide of pomp that beats upon the high shore of this world. No, not all these thrice gorgeous ceremony, not all these laid in bed majestical can sleep so soundly as the wretched slave, who with a body filled and vacant mind gets him to rest, crammed with distressful bread, never sees horrid night the child of hell, but like a lackey from the rise to set, sweats in the eye of Phoebus, and all night sleeps in Elysium. Next day after dawn doth rise and help Hyperion to his horse, and follow so the ever-running year with profitable labor to his grave. And but for ceremony, such a wretch, winding up days with toil and nights with sleep, had the forehand and vantage of a king.
My lord, your nobles, jealous of your absence, seek through your camp to find you.
Good old knight. Collect them all together at my tent. I'll be before thee.
I shall do it, my lord.
O God of battles, steal my soldiers' hearts. Possess them not with fear. Take from them now the sense of reckoning if the opposed numbers pluck their hearts from them. Not today. O Lord, oh, not today. Think not upon the fault my father made encompassing the crown. I, Richard's body, have interred anew, and on it have bestowed more contrite tears than from it issued forced drops of blood. 500 poor I have in yearly pay, who twice a day their withered hands hold up toward heaven to pardon blood, and I have built 2 chantries where the sad and solemn priest sings still for Richard's soul. More will I do, though all that I can do is nothing worth, since that my penitence comes, after all, imploring pardon.
My liege!
I know thy errand. I will go with thee. The day my friends and all things stay for me.
The sun doth gild our armor.
Up, my lords!
Montez à cheval!
How our steeds for present service neigh.
Mount them and make incision in their hides that their hot blood may spin in English eyes.
To horse! You gallant princes, straight to horse! Do but behold yon poor and starved band, and your fair show shall suck away their souls, leaving them but the shales and husks of men. There is not work enough for all our hands, scarce blood enough in all their sickly veins to give each naked kirtle axe a stain that our French gallant shall today draw out and sheave for lack of sport. Let us but blow on them. The vapor of our valor will o'erturn them. A very little let us do, and all is done. For our approach shall so much dare the field that England shall couch down in fear and yield.
Why do you stay so long, my lords of France? Yon island carrions, desperate of their bones, ill-favoredly become the morning field.
They have said their prayers, and they stay for death.
Himself is road to view their battle.
For fighting men they have full 60,000.
Yes, 5 to 1. Besides, they all are fresh.
God's arms strike with us. Tis a fearful odds. God be with you, princes all. I'll to my charge. We no more meet till we meet in heaven. Then joyfully, my noble lord of Bedford, my dear lord Gloucester, my good lord Exeter, and my kind kinsmen, warriors all, adieu.
Farewell, good Salisbury. and good luck go with thee.
Oh, that we now had here but 1/10,000 of those men in England that do no work today.
What's he that wishes so? My cousin Westmoreland? No, my fair cousin. If we are marked to die, we are enough to do our country loss. And if to live, the fewer men, the greater share of honor. God's will, I pray thee, wish not one man more. By Jove, I am not covetous for gold, nor care I who doth feed upon my cost. It yearns me not if men my garments wear. Such outward things dwell not in my desires. But if it be a sin to covet honor, I am the most offending soul alive. Thy faith, my cuz, wish not a man from England. God's peace, I would not lose so great an honor as one man more, methinks, would share from me for the best hope I have. Oh, do not wish one more. Rather proclaim it, Westmoreland, through my host, that he which hath no stomach to this fight, let him depart. His passport shall be made and crowns for convoy put into his purse. We would not die in that man's company that fears his fellowship to die with us. This day is called the Feast of Crispian. He that outlives this day and comes safe home will stand a tiptoe when the day is named and rouse him at the name of Crispian. He that shall live this day and see old age will yearly on the vigil feast his neighbours and say, tomorrow is St. Crispian. Then will he strip his sleeve and show his scars and say, these wounds I had on Crispin's day. Old men forget, yet all shall be forgot, but he'll remember with advantages what feats he did that day. Then shall our names, familiar in his mouth as household words, Harry the King, Bedford and Exeter, Westmoreland, Erpingham and York, be in their flowing cups freshly remembered. This story shall the good man teach his son, and Crispin Crispian shall ne'er go by from this day to the ending of the world, but we in it shall be remembered. We few, we happy few, we band of brothers, for he today that sheds his blood with me shall be my brother. Be he ne'er so vile, this day shall gentle his condition. And gentlemen in England now abed shall think themselves accursed they were not here, and hold their manhoods cheap, whilst any speaks that fought with us upon St. Crispin's Day!
My sovereign lord, bestow yourself with speed. The French are bravely in their battle set and will with all expedience charge on us.
All things are ready if our minds be so.
Perish the man whose mind is backward now.
Does not wish more help from England, cut?
God's will, my liege. Would you and I alone, without more help, could fight this royal battle?
Why, now thou hast unwished 5,000 men, which likes me better than to wish us one. You know your places. God be with you all.
Once more I come to know of thee, King Harry. If for thy ransom thou wilt now compound, before thy most assured overthrow.
Who hath sent thee now?
The Constable of France.
I pray thee, bear my former answer back. Bid them achieve me, and then sell my bones. Good God, why should they mock poor fellows thus? Many of our bodies shall no doubt find native graves, upon the which, I trust, shall witness live in brass of this day's work, and those that leave their valiant bones in France, dying like men, though buried in your dunghills, they shall be famed. For there the sun shall greet them, and draw their honours reeking up to heaven, leaving their earthly parts to choke your clime, the smell whereof shall breed a plague in France. Let me speak proudly. Tell the constable we are but warriors for the working day. Our gayness and our guilt are all besmirched with rainy marching in the painful field, but by the mass our hearts are in the trim.
and my poor soldiers tell me, yet ere night, they'll be in fresher robes, or they will pluck the gay new coats o'er the French soldiers' heads and turn them out of service. Herald, save thou thy labor. Come thou no more for ransom. They shall have none. I swear, but these my joints, which if they have as I will leave in them, shall yield them little. Tell the constable.
I shall, King Harry. And so fare thee well. Thou never shalt hear herald any more.
My lord, most humbly on my knee, I beg the leading of the vowed.
Take it, brave York. Now, soldiers, march away. And how thou pleasest God, dispose the day. Advance! On, you noble English!
God for Harry! England!
Come hither, boy. Bid him prepare, for I will cut his throat.
Que dit-il, monsieur?
Il me commande de vous dire que vous faites vous prêtes, car ces soldats ici est dispose tout de cette heure de couper votre gorge.
Peasant, unless thou give me crowns, brave crowns, or mangled shalt thou be by this my sword.
Gardez ma vie, et je vous donnerai 200 écus.
What are his words?
Well, he'll give you 200 crowns.
As I suck blood. I will some mercy show. Follow me.
What? Suivez-vous, le grand capitaine. I did never know so full a voice issue from so empty a heart. But the saying is true. The empty vessel makes the greatest sound. I must stay with the lackeys, with the luggage of our camp. The French might have a good prey of us, if he knew of it, for there is none to guard it but boys.
Come on, you dog!
Oh, diable!
Arrête! Go on!
Oh, Leo!
Seigneur, le jour est perdu. Tout est perdu.
Mort de ma vie. All is confounded. All reproach and everlasting shame sits mocking in our plumes. Oh, méchant fortune.
Do not run away!
All our ranks are broke.
Shame and eternal shame! Nothing but shame!
We are enough, yet living in the field, to smother up the English in our throngs. If any order might be thought upon.
The devil take order now! Answer the throng! Let life be short, else shame will be too long!
Well have we done, thrice valiant countrymen, but all's not done. Yet keep the French the field.
The Duke of York commends him to your majesty.
Livesey, good uncle. Thrice within this hour I saw him down, thrice up again, and fighting from helmet to the spur, all blood he was.
In which array, brave soldier, doth he lie, larding the plain? He smiled me in the face, wrought me his hand, and with a feeble grip says, dear my lord, commend my service to my sovereign. And so espoused to death, with blood he sealed a testament of noble-ending love. The pretty and sweet manner of it forced those waters from me which I would have stopped, but I had not so much of man in me. And all my mother came into mine eyes and gave me up to tears.
I blame you not. While hearing this, I must perforce compound with mistful eyes, or they will issue too.
The French have reinforced their scattered men. Take a trumpet, Harold. Ride thou unto the horsemen on yon hill. If they will fight with us, bid them come down, or void the field. They do offend our sight. If they'll do neither, we will come to them. Besides, we'll cut the throats of those we have, and not a man of them that we shall take shall taste our mercy. Go and tell them so.
Kill the boys. Tis expressly against the law of arms. Tis as arrant a piece of knavery as can be offered in your conscience now, is it not?
For certain, there's not a boy left alive. And the cowardly rascals that ran from the battle have done the slaughter.
Here comes His Majesty.
I was not angry since I came to France until this instant.
Here comes the herald of the French, Manish.
His eyes are humbler than they used to be.
How now? What means this, herald? Comest thou again for ransom?
No, great king. I come to thee for charitable license, that we may wander over this bloody field to book our dead, and then to bury them.
I tell thee truly, herald, I know not if the day be ours or no, for yet a many of your horsemen peer and gallop o'er the field.
The day is yours.
Praise be God, and not our strength for it. What is this castle called that stands hard by?
They call it Agincourt.
Then call we this the field of Agincourt. Fought on the day of Crispin Crispianus. Good uncle, go with him. Bring me just notice of the numbers dead on both our parts.
Sire.
Your grandfather of famous memory, and please your majesty, and your great uncle Edward the Black Prince of Wales, as I have read in the chronicles, fought a most brave battle here in France.
They did, Llewellyn.
Your Majesty says very true. If Your Majesty is remembered of it, the Welshmen did good service in a garden where leeks did grow, wearing leeks in their Monmouth caps, which Your Majesty knows to this hour is an honourable badge of the service. And I do believe Your Majesty takes no scorn to wear the leek upon St. David's Day.
I wear it for a memorable honour, for I am Welsh, you know, good countryman.
All the water in the Wye cannot wash your majesty's Welsh blood out of your body, I can tell you that. God bless and preserve it as long as it pleases his grace and his majesty too.
Thanks, good my countryman.
Yes, I am your majesty's countryman. I care not who knows it. I will confess it to all the world. I need not to be ashamed of your majesty. Praise be God, so long as your majesty is an honest man.
God keep me, sir. Ah, soldier, why wearest thou that glove in thy cap?
And please, your majesty, 'tis the gage of one that I should fight withal, if he be alive.
An Englishman?
And please, your majesty, a rascal that swaggered with me last night, who, if alive and ever dare to challenge this glove, I have sworn to take him a box of the ear.
What think you, Captain Llewellyn? Is it fit this soldier keep his oath?
He's a craven and a villain else, and please, your majesty, in my conscience...
It may be his enemy is a gentleman of great sort, quite from the answer of his degree.
Though he be as good a gentleman as the devil is, it is necessary, your grace, that he keep his vow and his oath.
Then keep thy vow, sirrah, when thou meetest the fellow.
So I will, my liege, as I live.
Give me thy glove, soldier. Look, here is the fellow of it. 'Twas I indeed thou promised to strike, and thou hast given me most bitter terms.
Please, your majesty, let his neck answer for it, if there is any martial law in the world.
How canst thou make me satisfaction?
All offences, my lord, come from the heart. Never came any from mine that might offend your majesty.
It was ourself thou didst abuse.
Your majesty came not like yourself. You appeared to me but as a common man. Witness the night, your garments, your lowliness, and what your highness suffered under that shape. I beseech you, take it for your own fault and not mine. For had you been as I took you for, I made no offence. Therefore, I beseech your highness, pardon me.
Here, captain, fill this glove with crowns and give it to this fellow. Keep it, fellow, and wear it for an honour in thy cap.
My liege.
By this day and this light, the fellow has metal enough in his belly.
Now, uncle, are the dead numbered?
Here is the number of the slaughtered French.
This note doth tell me of 10,000 French that in the field lie slain. Of princes in this number and nobles bearing banners, there lie dead 126. Added to these, of knights, esquires, and gallant gentlemen, 8,400, of the which 500 were but yesterday dubbed knights. So that in these 10,000 they have lost, there are but 1,600 mercenaries. The rest are princes, barons, lords, knights, squires, and gentlemen of blood and quality. Here was a royal fellowship of death. Where is the number of our English dead?
Edward, the Duke of York, the Earl of Suffolk, Sir Richard Ketley, David Gann, Esquire, none else of name, and of all other men but 25.
God, thy arm was here. Has ever known so great and little loss in one part and on the other? Take it, God, for it is none but thine.
It is wonderful.
Come. Go we in procession to the village, and be it death proclaimed through our host to boast of this, or take the praise from God, which is his only.
Is it not lawful, and please your majesty, to tell how many is killed?
Yes, captain, but with this acknowledgement, God fought for us. Do we all holy rites? Let there be sung Non Nobis and Te Deum, the dead with charity enclosed in clay. And then to Calais, and to England then, when there from France arrived more happy men.
Meeting wherefore we are met. Unto our brother France and to our sister, health and fair time of day. Joy and good wishes to our most fair and princely cousin Catherine. And as a branch and member of this royalty by whom this great assembly is contrived, we do salute you, Duke of Burgundy, and princes French and peers, health to you all.
Right joyous are we to behold your face, most worthy brother England. Fairly met,
So are you, Princess English. Everyone.
My duty to you both on equal love, great kings of France and England. That I have labored with all my wits, my pains, and strong endeavors to bring your most imperial majesties unto this bar and royal interview, your mightiness on both parts best can witness. Since then my office hath so far prevailed that face to face and royal eye to eye you have congreeted, let it not disgrace me if I demand before this royal view why that the naked poor and mangled peace should not in this best garden of the world, our fertile France, put up her lovely visage. Alas, she hath from France too long been chased, and all her husbandry doth lie on heaps, corrupting in its own fertility. And as our vineyards, fallows, meads, and hedges, defective in their natures, grow to wildness, even so our houses and ourselves and children have lost, or do not learn for want of time, the sciences that should become our country, but grow like savages, as soldiers will, that nothing do but meditate on blood, to swearing and stern looks, diffused attire, and everything that seems unnatural, which to reduce into our former favor you are assembled. And my speech entreats that I may know the let why gentle peace should not expel these inconveniences and bless us with her former qualities.
If, Duke of Burgundy, you would the peace, whose want gives growth to the imperfections which you have cited, you must buy that peace with full accord to all our just demands.
The king hath heard them, to the which, as yet, there is no answer made.
I have but with a cursory eye o'erglanced the articles. Pleaseth your grace to appoint some of your council presently to sit with us once more, with better heed to resurvey them, we will suddenly pass our accept and peremptory answer.
Brother, we shall. Go, Uncle Exeter, and Brother Clarence, and you, Brother Gloucester.
Sire, my liege.
Yet leave our cousin Catherine here with us. She is our capital demand, comprised within the forerank of our articles.
She hath good leave.
Fair Catherine, and
most fair.
Will you vouchsafe to teach a soldier terms such as will enter at a lady's ear and plead his love suit to her gentle heart?
Your Majesty shall mock at me. I cannot speak your England.
Fair Catherine, if you will love me soundly with your French heart, I will be glad to hear you confess it brokenly with your English tongue. Do you like me, Kate?
Pardonnez-moi, I cannot tell what is like me.
An angel is like you, Kate, and you are like an angel.
Que dit-il? Que je suis semblable à les anges?
Oui, vraiment, sauf votre grâce, ainsi dit-il.
Oh, mon Dieu, les langues des hommes sont pleines de tromperies.
What says she, fair one, that the tongues of men are full of deceit?
Oui, that the tongues of the man is be full of deceit. That is the princess.
The princess is the better Englishwoman. If faith, Kate, my wooing is fit for thy understanding. I am glad thou canst speak no better English, for if thou couldst, thou wouldst find me such a plain king that thou wouldst think I had sold my farm to buy my crown. I know no ways to mince it in love, but directly to say, I love you. Then if you urge me further than to say, do you in faith, I wear out my suit. Give me your answer, if faith do, and so clap hands and a bargain. How say you, lady?
So, votre honour, me understand well.
Mary, if you would put me to verses or to dance for your sake, Kate, why, you undid me. If I could win a lady at leapfrog, or by vaulting into my saddle with my armour on my back under the correction of bragging, be it spoken, I should quickly leap into a wife. Before God, Kate, I cannot look greenly, nor gasp out my eloquence, nor I have no cunning in protestation, only downright oaths, which I never use till urged, nor never break for urging. If thou canst love a fellow of this temper, Kate, whose face is not worth sunburning, that never looks in his glass for love of anything he sees there, let thine eye be thy cook. I speak to thee, plain soldier. If thou canst love me for this, take me. If not, to say to thee that I shall die is true, but for thy love, by the Lord, no. Yet, I love thee too. If thou would have such a one, take me. And take me. Take a soldier. Take a soldier. Take a king. And what sayest thou then to my love? Speak, my fair, and fairly, I pray thee.
Is it possible that I should love the enemy of France?
No. It is not possible you should love the enemy of France, Kate, but in loving me, you should love the friend of France, for I love France so well that I will not part with a village of it. I will have it all mine. And, Kate, when France is mine and I am yours, then yours is France and you are mine.
I cannot tell what is that.
No, Kate? I will tell thee in French, which I'm sure will hang upon my tongue like a new married wife about her husband's neck, hardly to be shook off. Je compte sur la position de France et quand vous avez la possession de moi, let me see what then. Donc, votre et France et vous êtes mienne. It is as easy for me, Kate, to conquer the kingdom as to speak so much more French. I shall never move thee in French unless it be to laugh at me.
Sauf votre honneur, le français que vous parlez, il est meilleur que l'anglais lequel je parle.
No, faith, it's not, Kate, but... Kate, dost thou understand thus much English? Canst thou love me?
I cannot tell.
Can any of your neighbours tell, Kate? I'll ask them. Come, I know thou lovest me. And at night, when you come into your closet, you'll question this gentlewoman about me. And I know, Kate, you will to her dispraise those parts in me that you love with your heart. But, good Kate, mock me mercifully, the rather gentle princess, because I love thee cruelly. By mine honour, in true English, I love thee, Kate. By which honour, I dare not swear thou lovest me, yet my blood begins to flatter me that thou dost, notwithstanding the poor and untempering effect of my visage. Now, beshrew my father's ambition. He was thinking of civil wars when he got me. Therefore was I created with a stubborn outside, with an aspect of iron, that when I come to woo ladies, I fright them. But in faith, Kate, thou hast me. If thou hast me, at the worst. And thou shalt wear me, if thou wear me, better and better. And therefore, tell me, most fair Catherine, will you have me? Come, your answer in broken music, for thy voice is music and thy English broken. Therefore, queen of all, Catherine, break thy mind to me in broken English. Wilt thou have me?
That is as it shall please the roi mon père.
Nay, it will please him. Well, Kate, it shall please him, Kate.
Then it shall also content me.
Upon that, I kiss your hand, and I call you my queen.
Laissez, monseigneur, laissez, laissez, ma foi. Je ne veux point que vous abaissiez votre grandeur en baisant la main d'une de votre seigneurie indigne serviteur. Excusez-moi, je vous supplie, mon très puissant seigneur.
Then I will kiss your lips, Kate.
Les dames et demoiselles pour être baisées devant leurs noces. Il n'est pas la coutume de France.
Madame, my interpreter, what says she?
That it is not the fashion for the ladies of France. Oh, I cannot tell what is baiser en anglais.
To kiss.
Oh, your majesty entend better que moi.
It is not a fashion for the maids in France to kiss before they are married, would she say?
Oui, vraiment.
Okay, it's nice customs, curtsy to great kings. Dear Kate, you and I cannot be confined within the weak list of a country's fashion. We are the makers of manners, Kate. Therefore, patiently and yielding. You have witchcraft in your lips, Kate. There is more eloquence in the sugar touch of them than in the tongues of the French council. And they should sooner persuade Harry of England than a general petition of monarchs. Here comes your father.
God save your majesty, my royal cousin. Teach you our princess English?
I would have her learn, my fair cousin, how perfectly I love her, and that is good English.
We have consented to all terms of reason.
Is it so, my lords of England?
The king hath granted every article.
And thereupon, give me your daughter.
Take her, fair son, and from her blood raise up issue to me, that the contending kingdoms of France and England, whose very shores look pale with envy of each other's happiness, may cease their hatred. And this dear conjunction plant neighborhood and Christian-like accord in their sweet bosoms, that never war advance his bleeding sword twixt England and fair France.
Amen.
Thus far, with rough and all unable pen, our bending author hath pursued the story. In little room, confining mighty men, mangling by starts the full course of their glory. Small time, but in that small most greatly lived this star of England. Fortune made his sword, by which the world's best garden he achieved, and of it left his son imperial lord. Henry VI, in infant bands crowned king, of France and England did this king succeed, whose state so many had the managing, that they lost France, and made his England bleed.
In Henry V, Henry was played by Ben Lloyd Hughes. Exeter was Nicholas Farrell, Llewellyn, Stephen Rodri, Westmorland, Roger Ringrose, Pistol, Lloyd Hutchinson, Nim, Ben Crow, Bardolph, Ewan Bailey, the hostess, Jessica Turner, and the boy, Billy Jenkins. The King of France was played by Steve Toussaint, Catherine by Freya Maver, the Dauphin, Luke Newbury, the Constable, John Lightbody, Montjoy, Ian Dunnett Jr., and Orleans, Charlie Anson. The Archbishop of Canterbury was Michael Burtonshaw, and the Duke of Burgundy, Nicholas Murchie. The chorus was played by Penelope Wilton. The music was composed by John Nichols, and the director was Sally Evans. It was a BBC Studios audio production for Radio 3.
Well, to continue the Shakespeare theme for a few minutes more on Radio 3, the contralto Jess Dandy joins the choir of Clare College, Cambridge, and Britain Sinfonia, conducted by William Vann, in this hymn, Pan is Our All, from Vaughan Williams' score for Ben Jonson's masque Pan's Anniversary, restaged for the Shakespeare birthday celebrations in Stratford in 1905. Jess Dandy with the choir of Clare College, Cambridge and Britain Sinfonia, conducted by William Vann, in Pan Is Our All by Vaughan Williams from Pan's Anniversary. And this Wednesday evening on Radio 3, Jess Dandy joins the BBC Philharmonic to perform a setting of the Stabat Mater by the African-American composer Julia Perry, part of a Radio 3 in concert given last month to mark the 200th anniversary of the birth of Bejic Smetana. It opens with Vltava from his Ma Vlast and ends with Shostakovich's blistering Fifth Symphony. That's on Wednesday evening at 7:30.
I'm Soweto Kinch. This is Round Midnight, Radio 3's brand new weeknight jazz show. I'll be selecting the very best in jazz from every era and from every corner of the world, but I'm going to be shining a special light on new music from the UK.
There was something about the feel and the playfulness, I guess, I'm hearing in her voice. Because, well, you know me, Soweto.
Indeed.
Can be quite cheeky.
Round Midnight with me, Soweto Kinch. Weeknights from 11:30 on Radio 3 and BBC Sounds.
On FM, on digital and on your smart speaker, this is BBC Radio 3. It's 10 o'clock.
Hello, I'm Hannah Peel, and welcome to Radio 3's Night Tracks, where we're going to begin slowly and expressively with music by Aaron Copland.